This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play.
Well, we're defending two or less goals in 7 of 8, and if you take the Ottawa game and giving up that late one, it didn't really have an impact on the game. You're giving yourself a chance to get points, and that's what we're doing. And they haven't all been pretty, but the boys are defending, and if we're not there, Vass is, you know, up to the task to make the save.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to have that conversation about how good are you defensively without putting your goaltender like Andre Vasilevskiy at the forefront, because he does cover up a lot of mistakes. There's no question the Lightning have become a better defensive team, more responsible over the last handful of years, and I think it's a big reason why they've won back-to-back cups. But when you have the best in the world behind you, backing you up, it makes it a little easier to maybe digest some of those scoring opportunities that you do give up or have breakdowns in your own zone. We're going to talk about that throughout the show today. It is Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. I am Greg Lanelli, along with my partner Dave Mishkin. Steve Ersnick is producing. Joe Smith from The Athletic will be joining us in just a few moments, and we'll talk to him about Andre Vasilevskiy and so much more. We've got a poll question right now for you to answer, understanding this is a predominantly Lightning market, but I think we like to be fair when it comes to other topics.
We like to be fair. Yeah, we'll see about the responses. It's out in the Twitterverse, so
it is.
Anybody can respond.
Anybody can, and maybe this goes viral a bit, so share with your friends if you can. Who is more dominant at his position today? And we gave you two choices because I think it's fair to say these two athletes right now at their positions are the most dominant, and that would be Andre Vasilevskiy or Connor McDavid. It's funny, neither one is leading their respective positions right now in, you know, the major statistical categories, but we do understand that I think everybody looks at those two guys as probably the best at what they do at their position. So we thought we'd have some fun with it today as the Lightning gets set to take on the Flyers tomorrow night. It does look like Vasi is going to get a start there in net. I know there had been some talk, Dave, about Brian Elliott possibly going against his former team, but
I wondered that. I asked Bill.
The schedule has kind of played out a bit where, you know, maybe Vasi and his workload is certainly manageable right now, Dave, with how much time in between games we have seen so far.
Yeah, another two-day, when I say break, I mean the team practiced yesterday. So it's not like they just put their feet up for the last 48 hours. But the games were Monday, Thursday. Why not play Vasi, right? And then you got a back-to-back this weekend, so you know Elliott's getting one of those games. So Vasi is getting a break coming up here. And I think as the schedule picks up as we get into late November, into December, a lot more road games, some back-to-backs thrown in there. Frequency of games will pick up to far fewer two-day segments with no game than we have had to this point. Two-plus, sometimes three-day segments with no games. So Elliott's going to start to get some regular work here.
You know,
but I guess it's not tomorrow night, so.
No. And I do want to get into this debate a bit, but you mentioned the days off in between, Dave, and it's more of an interesting observation, and I'm curious to just maybe get your thoughts on it, and if our audience wants to weigh in, they can at Bolts Radio. I told you I was listening to Jeff Merrick. He had a 32 Thoughts podcast without Elliott Friedman the other day, and he had on Kyle Woolley, or Kevin Woodley, I should say, who is the, as Elliott Friedman calls him, the goalie whisperer. He's from In Goal Magazine. And he also writes for NHL.com, mainly covers the Vancouver Canucks. But his focus is on goaltenders. Anyways,
does he actually whisper to goalies, or he whispers to people who are interested
in hearing
what he has to say about goalies?
I think it would be the latter, but I'd have to have Jeff Merrick on to ask him that. But what was interesting about the conversation, I'm not going to get into everything they discussed. One of the things they did discuss, though, Dave, and it is interesting, and we could ask one of the Lightning coaches when they do come on, is that Kevin had written an article a while back. He said it was a throwaway article that ended up going viral, and he said he got a lot of feedback off of it because it dealt with practices for goaltenders in many ways is meaningless and that they can develop bad habits in practice. And his point was, you know, a lot of times your goaltender, when they're doing these drills, they're put in a situation where the shooters are shooting from spots on the ice where they're probably not going to get those looks during a game. And that because of that, perhaps you're cheating a bit if you're a goaltender. Perhaps you're developing some bad habits because you want to be a good teammate and you're out there on a 3-on-0 helping the forwards get in some work. And it was interesting because he said it's one of those things because they're starting to incorporate, I don't know every team yet, but it's starting to make its way. And I think we're going to start hearing this, Dave, this virtual reality opportunity for teams and specifically goaltenders to work through any issues or practice habits they may have. Rather than go on the ice, they can start doing virtually. And mm-hmm. because we always talk about the wear and tear that goaltenders go through and how, you know, look, 10, 15 years into the position, your hips, your knees, they start to really go bad because like in baseball as a pitcher, it's just an awkward position. It's not normal. And they were talking about practice habits, and they were just saying that's one way teams are maybe going to get away from goaltenders constantly being on the ice. But he was saying how goaltenders don't need to be on the ice all that much for practice. And when they are on practice, a lot of times teams, it's not beneficial for the goaltender because the shooters are put in these advantageous situations yeah. that they're not even going to get in a game. I thought it was just an interesting observation.
It is an interesting observation. I have some thoughts on it. And clearly he's watched practices, so yes. it's not like he's coming at this without any evidence of what is going on in yes. practice. So usually at the beginning of a practice on a non-game day and most morning skate practices and, in fact, warm-ups, what we see on the ice right before a game, I agree with him. A lot of these drills are kind of getting the players, the non-goalies, a chance to move their legs, get a feel for the puck. I mean, you don't see a lot of 3-on-0s, certainly, in an actual game. And he's right. Like, a lot of the shots that the goalies would face in those drills
yeah.
are not representative of what would happen in a game. But to say there's no value to the goalie, I'm not sure that I'm willing to go that far because the goalie does get a chance, like the players, to feel the puck. I mean, a lot of times at the beginning of warm-ups, which I know you watch, Greg, because you're in the booth at that point, even though you're on the air, you can see what's going on, certainly in morning skates. Like, the early shots are fairly routine, nothing up high. It's just allowing the goalies to get a feel for the puck. I don't think that that's worthless. But to his point, like, how can a goalie replicate in practice what actually happens in a game? Here's where I differ. You usually see this on non-game day practices when the team is looking to work through something specific, whether it's like 5-on-5 in a zone, and maybe the onus is on the offensive team, the five players who are on offense, basically, to figure out a way to win a puck battle and get a shot to the net. Like, those drills, the goalies are dealing with traffic. Those drills, the goalies are dealing with tips and rebounds. And that is much closer to what you actually see in a game. Now, that is not the majority of the time they are on the ice. But to say that it doesn't happen at all, I don't think is accurate. And then, this is usually for a guy like Brian Elliott, for example, who has said in response to the question, like, how do you handle not playing as much as you're used to? And he said, I treat the practices like games. So, I mean, he is zeroing in mentally to do what he needs to do to get ready in practice for when he gets into a game. But because he is not starting often, he stays out after the practice with the scratches. And we have seen this, Greg, when we have done this show from the booth at Amalie Arena with the visiting team when the scratches are out. So usually the non-goalie scratches, there is a coach out there who is kind of putting them through the paces. But you know who else is out there without fail? The goalie coach.
Yes.
And that's when a lot of the work, now it's not like a game situation, like there are 10 players in front of him in the zone and he's finding pucks and dealing with tips and screens. But there are a lot of times that Franz John, for example, will work on specific drills for the goalie. Guy coming from behind the net, how does the goalie handle that? Like, where is his stick? Can he poke check the puck away? If he can't, what position is he against that short side post? That, to me, has value. And I think if it didn't have value, they wouldn't be doing it. So, you know how I am with blanket statements, right? I am not disagreeing that more time on the ice might not always be the best thing for goalies. I am also in agreement that a lot of the time they are on the ice, it is not replicating what they may be seeing in a game. But to say that it's not valuable at all,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know that I'm willing to go there. And what I wonder about the virtual stuff, like, can you replicate? I mean, he's talking about replicating game situations. Can you replicate what it's like on? I'm assuming this is on a screen, like, you know, you play golf, right? Digitally, yes. Like you hit the ball and you see where it goes. Can a goalie get the same feel reacting to something he's seeing on a screen, as opposed to actually having human bodies in front of him?
I think, like anything, Dave, it's probably going to be a balance.
Yeah,
how much time do you stop? You go on the ice, but also too, you know. And it struck me, and I don't want to put words in his mouth. I don't want to say he saw no value in practice. So that's unfair to Kevin. That was me probably interpreting it a bit. I think.
Well, I don't think you said that. I'm.
And I think,
being
in fairness,
hyperbolic.
No, and that's fine. And I think what drew me to the conversation, Dave, was basically we have heard so much about how much Vasi loves to be on the ice and how maybe one of the areas where he has matured, and maybe the team has matured as an organization, is getting Vasi off the ice and getting proper rest. And so it just got me thinking when I heard Kevin talk about that on the podcast, about just goaltenders maybe going more virtual at some point just to save their body, the wear and tear. Again, he was talking about how it's a tough position physically.
Yeah, you're down in the butterfly, you're up. You're down,
yeah, it's
you're
it's
up.
Like a pitcher. It's not a natural.
Or a catcher. Yeah,
exactly.
Down in the crouch.
Exactly. And so that might be one of those ways where there is a balance for teams that do more virtual and more on-ice instruction. But it got me thinking. It was just interesting because Vasi, I think, one of the big things, Dave, we have taken from the last couple of years, in addition to his development as the world's best, is that I think he's managed his time a lot better. Maybe because he's had to. I mean, I think when you're young, you want to be on the ice as much as possible. You know, he wasn't the starter. He was behind Bishop. So I'm sure he wanted to see as many pucks as possible. But I think as you get a little bit older, you get a little smarter. You practice smarter. Not harder. You practice smarter.
Yeah.
And it was just interesting hearing somebody's observation about, A, is practice time as valuable as we think for a goaltender? It's certainly, there is value. But
you
is
know
there
there's an Allen Iverson soundbite that somebody needs to interject
well,
in there.
You know, look, for Allen Iverson.
We know what he thinks about it, don't we?
You know, for Allen Iverson, he was a Hall of Fame talent, and he probably looked at practice and said, you know, I know what I'm going to get out of it. I'll get a few shots up, and that's fine, but I don't know if I need to go through an hour and a half. And I'm just curious that development for a goaltender.
Yeah, and I've heard stories, and this has not been the case with Lightning goalies. But I don't remember which. And I think plural, goalies, I read about this. Like, they did basically drills for their eyes. Like, I'm not phrasing it well. I'm phrasing it really awkwardly. But that was virtual. Like, they had a certain drill set that helped them keep their eyes basically sharp, right? And their eye muscles reactive. If I'm using really bad terminology here because this is way out of my league, but essentially, like, being able to see pucks and pick up pucks is really important for goalies. So there are things that you can do to help your eyes stay sharp with that or get better with that. And I remember reading there were some goalies that did some work that was definitely off ice that they felt would help their game. I just think that when I hear something like that, you have 32 goalie coaches in the NHL and more goalie coaches in organizations working with minor leaguers and prospects, etc. Then you have the goalies themselves. And I agree there's part of sometimes a culture that makes us a little robotic. We're like, well, this is the way it's always been, right? So we're just going to keep doing it. I don't know. I think that this question has probably been considered about, yeah, we know in the morning skate, the goalie is seeing shots he's probably not going to be seeing in a game, but we're still doing it because A, B, C, and D. Like, there are reasons why. Maybe I have too much faith in the process, but I think that for example, the goalie coach's job is to look after the goalies and make sure the goalies are ready to perform at their best. And if the goalie coach, any goalie coach, felt that this was too much wasted work for his guys, we would start to see other things happening, right?
Correct.
I guess that's kind of how I come down on it. But we should definitely, the next time we have Franjean on, ask him these questions.
I think it would be, yeah, I think,
like,
it would be,
like, what do you think about these drills that are not really representative for your goalies?
Yes.
As to what they would be seeing in a game. Why is that valuable? Or are they taking one for the team, like Kevin was basically implying, or maybe he said it.
Yeah.
That they're doing it for the sake of the skaters.
Well, it's something we will ask next time we have a coach on, for sure.
Yeah.
And we'll get into the debate with Vassie and McDavid. But I thought it was just something to think about when we talk about the practice habits and maybe where that position is headed in terms of practicing moving forward. Joe Smith from The Athletic had a really interesting article the other day regarding Andre Vasilevskiy. I actually think our poll question, Dave, could be a very good article for Joe down the road, and certainly he can give us credit for it. We won't take a portion of the proceeds.
You came up with the question.
Well, we're a team here, Dave. We take credit as a team, and possibly I think because the thing I like about The Athletic, they have access to a lot of different voices, and I think a lot of people could weigh in on a topic like that, and that's something maybe we'll discuss with Joe when we return. He is Dave Michigan. I am Greg Linnelli. Hit us up on Twitter at Bolts Radio. Weigh in on the poll question. Who is more dominant at his position today, Andre Vasilevskiy or Connor McDavid? Back after this on Lightning Power Play.
Hey, it's Seth Kushner from The Block Party, and we are back this week with another excellent episode. BB, Alex Barré-Boulet, stops by. We talk about his very brief stint with the Kraken, what it was like celebrating the Stanley Cup last year, and when he knew it was time to hit the ice with Killer for the celebration after the Game 5 clincher. We also have episodes up this season with Anton Strahlman, Vazzy, Bogo, and Belmar. It's The Block Party with Seth Kushner, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
Glad you're with us. Power Lunch continues. Greg Linnelli, Dave Michigan, Steve Ersnick producing. Joe Smith from The Athletic joins us right now. We have a poll question up on Twitter, at Bolts Radio. Who is more dominant at his position today, Andre Vasilevskiy or Connor McDavid? Let's bring in Joe Smith to talk about that poll question and much more. Joe, I actually think that could be a topic for you down the road, man. You have access to so many different people in the league. That's why I think so many people like reading your articles and The Athletic in general. You know, you talk about big picture stuff. I'm not sure there are two players who are more dominant at their position in a parity-driven league than Vasilevskiy and Connor McDavid, and I'd be curious to see maybe what some executives actually think when it comes to that question.
No, absolutely. And you know, I tried to make the case last year before the end of the season on Vasilevskiy for heart consideration, just because of the drop off with him and the next replacement and just how good he was and how important he was the way the Lightning play. You talk to a bunch of people about that and, you know, the idea of the goalies being MVP and such. But in the case of this season, I mean, David's been unbelievable. And so it's hard to top him in that individual rank. But, you know, if you talk to most people in the league, and they'll say there is a pretty decent drop from Vasilevskiy to the next goalie in the league. And so in the context of Lightning and their season and everything else, I think it'd be pretty close, quite frankly. You know, when McDavid has the points that he has, it's hard to overlook that considering how much him and Draisaitl do together.
Greg's looking to make a little extra money as your editor, by the way, Joe. So he's keep feeding.
Hey,
you
I gotta put food on the table,
Dave. Royalties.
So yeah, we have some openings. So apply. I know you got a day job. So, but
that's right.
I want to ask you, Joe, a question that comes at this from a different angle, and it was something we broached on our show yesterday, because the Lightning came out of that 3-game homestand talking about how well they defended in front of Vasilevsky. Do you think when the Lightning have a good defensive game in terms of low goals against, that the perception is that it's mostly Vasilevsky, or do you think that the Lightning's ability to defend gets enough credit maybe outside their locker room? In conjunction with Vasilevsky as well, but the guys in front of Vasi too.
Well, I think they give probably Vasilevsky a lot of benefit of the doubt considering how good he is. And number two, the perception of the Lightning over the years, right? Kind of the run and gun team and greatest show on ice. But I think the playoffs might have started to change that narrative a bit the last couple of years. In terms of, you know, watching, let's say, Game 7 against the Islanders, for example, was, I think, an absolute claim one of the best defensive performances I've seen from this team in a long time. And where if they would have played four more periods, I don't know if the Islanders would have scored even then. And it wasn't like Vasilevsky was really good, and he made some key saves, but they weren't giving them much. So, you know, I do think that having Vasilevsky in there saves them from some of the defensive lapses that would have made those, you know, two goals or less in the last 7 or 8 games, not there anymore. Like the breakaway save on Duclair, these kind of momentum swinging saves that he makes that all of a sudden, instead of being, you know, it's 1-0 another team or 2-1 another team. So those kind of timely saves have really been crucial in keeping them kind of on their on the rhythm there defensively. But yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of the credit will go to Vasilevsky, but I think you're starting to see, since the playoffs the last couple of years, you're starting to see maybe more perception of them, you know, maybe being a better defensive team.
I want to stay with that because it's not a perception. The Lightning's back end, I think, especially when you, Joe, talk about their top four, it's as good as any. And I want to narrow it down to two guys, Hedman and McDonough. A lot of talk, Victor Hedman, Hall of Fame worthy, I think, at this point. He puts up the offensive numbers. And I think sometimes that outweighs maybe how good or at times maybe how shaky he could be defensively, particularly early on. But is there an argument to be made that Ryan McDonough is their most complete defenseman? Because he has put up offensive numbers in the past with the Rangers when he was asked to do that. I mean, he was a 35-40-point guy, maybe asked to do things differently on this team. But we know it's there, and we know how good he's been defensively since he's been here in Tampa Bay. I mean, can you make that argument, Joe, that McDonough is their most complete defenseman?
I think that Hedman still has more offensive, and he could still drive the play more offensively. I don't think he could do that. He's just been kind of trained after years in New York to be that shutdown guy. But I mean, I made the argument in the playoffs that McDonough was their best overall defenseman in that playoff run, and Chernak wasn't that far behind. So I think, talking about complete, or you talk about two-way, I guess I don't know if it's the same word or same description, but yeah, I think McDonough's been their best, you know, until Chernak got hurt, the best defenseman they've had on their team this year as far as all-around game. I just think when you talk about best two-way guy, like in terms of potential or ability, I think Hedman's, I think, has more offensive ability in his game and offensive instincts in his game and offensive opportunities in his game with the top power play and stuff like that. But I think if you're saying, like, you know, give me, you know, one shift right now at the end of a game, you know, I think that McDonough, obviously Hedman would get that chance too, but McDonough has been one of those guys that was so remarkably consistent, you know, from last playoff on, or even most of his time in Tampa. But clearly he's a big reason why that they're in their standings where they are right now.
Joe, you just did an article that looked at Stamkos' summer and how he trained and how that relates to his hot start. What did you learn in doing that article?
Yeah, like, you know, he said he's the best he's felt in years, physically and mentally, and you kind of wondered why, and you kind of understood why after looking at it. This was the first time he's actually had a summer to offseason to train, not just rehab or rest or come off something. His first time in maybe 2.5 years he's had this opportunity, and that's a huge part of strength building, core building, agility and skating. And he basically was talking to Gary Roberts about this for this story. And, you know, where before he would have 0 weeks, now he had 8 to 10 weeks, and he would spend the first few weeks, you know, resting and rehabbing. Then he'd work up to turf drills and workouts, which are like sprints and stuff like that, and agility, and then in the gym. And so that stuff is so important for an athlete, especially a player like Stamkos, who's dealt with so many injuries over the years, that to have that time to recoup and also refurbish those muscles and get stronger. And it's really been direct related to how he's felt and how he's skated. And, you know, mentally, that's a big, big impact too, of knowing you can, things that you couldn't do before, now you can do a little bit more. And so it was interesting just like to kind of get a little look behind there, what those workouts were like, and how he told Roberts at one point, hey, it feels good for my new normal now. It feels like I can, I'm kind of happy with it. So it's definitely encouraging, you know, for the Lightning and for Steven himself.
Joe, where do you think his best position is right now for this Lightning team this year?
Well, I mean, I think overall, I think his best spot's on the wing. I think right now, I think it's in, he's in the right spot, because I think they needed to rework kind of that top line with Kucherov out, and Cirelli's been really good on the wing, and it gives them kind of an offensive and shutdown line there with Palat and Point. So I think, you know, the coaches kind of feel it's kind of a necessity to have Stamkos in the middle. It's a luxury too, to have an extra depth at center to have that. But I think if you're a full healthy lineup for the Lightning, I think, you know, that second line right wing, I think is a really good spot for him, considering everything he can do. So, but you know, you're kind of happy for him as a person that he gets to go back to a place that he's been in his entire life up the middle, and definitely gets a chance to show he can do that defensively and face offs. He's one of the best. So I think for right now, the way it's constructed, I think it's a good spot for him in there.
In this same article, you kind of floated the idea of, could he get on Team Canada for the Olympics? What would be the reasons that Team Canada would want to add him, understanding there's so much competition for these coveted spots on Team Canada?
Well, and it's not knowing their full roster, who they're bringing. Like, are they bringing O'Reilly or Couturier to be a fourth line center? Are they doing something like that? You know, where's Braden Point slot in? I don't think he'd be like a top six guy. I think if you have in between, you know, the 10th and 14th forwards, I think there's a spot there. I think he's still skating is right back up there again. He's got elite level scoring ability. I know they have a ton of offensive weapons on that Canada team, McKinnon, McDavid, everybody else, but he's another one of those guys you can, you know, pop on to the power play and he could be a big force for you. He's really good in the face-off circle. So, like I said, I think he entered the season on the bubble, and I think he still very well might be on the bubble as far as those spots go, but, you know, he needed to have a good start and a productive start. At least he's done that and put himself in the conversation, and it kind of all depends on where what they're looking for as far as the roster construction of who else they're having on that team up front. So, you know, by no means is this a slam dunk, but I think there's, you know, an argument to be made. And for all his history in the league and the chances that he could have probably should have had before in the past to be on this team, you know, there's still a presence about him that you like to have and probably in your room too. So, you know, not a guarantee by any stretch, but I think, you know, if he continues to play well and skate well and maybe even get better in his own end, I think that there's, you know, going to be at least a discussion about it going forward. Maybe you have to feel differently about it, but that's just my feeling.
Joe Smith from The Athletic joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. Joe, how do you think the new guys have looked so far up to this point, the rookies and a couple of the veterans they signed in the offseason? And do you feel like this is just going to be a work in progress and these guys won't feel totally comfortable until the playoffs begin? Or have you seen some signs that these guys are starting to feel pretty good in their roles?
Yeah, if you go one by one here, I mean, Belmar has been tremendous. He's been as advertised defensively as a leader, kind of a positive presence in the room. And, you know, the penalty kill, we all wondered who would be on that unit there with Coleman and Goudreau gone. And both him and Matthew Joseph have been so good as a dynamic duo there on the penalty kill and really made them a bright spot for them. So he's been seamlessly, it seems like, fitting, like he's been there for years. You know, Corey Perry, this is the longest time he started a season without a goal in his career, and he's had as good many chances as most guys on this team, so they're not really worried about that. He's been kind of brought in for, you know, the playoff-type Corey Perry than necessarily carrying them offensively, but I think that'll come soon as far as him producing. He's already gotten a letter within the first five games of his career in the Lightning, so that shows how much they think of him. His voice has already been, he's already been speaking up, and you know, Maroon said they needed some more voices after losing so many guys last year, and he's been part of that. And I think what's interesting to me is that kind of the rookies, right? You needed to have the Tkachuks and the Radishes step in and be not top six guys, but guys that could be reliable and play some key minutes. And I think you're starting to see, you know, both Tkachuk and Radish start to come along here and kind of find their way. And Barbalay is the same way. And so they won't play like more than in 10, 12 minutes. But if you can have a fourth line like that with Colton, that could really be energizer for you and be more on the offensive end than defensive end. And those guys can just get their first goal in confidence. I think it'll be good for them going forward. So those guys will take a little bit more time, but I'm not worried about the veteran guys. And we'll see more of Elliott, too, as the season goes on. And he'll be one of those X factors, I think, for me, because you can't play Vasilevskiy all the time. And if Elliott can be give you a chance and, you know, three out of four starts he has, then I think you're going to be in good shape.
Joe, what stories do you have in store for the fans upcoming that you can tell us about?
Well, I was gone last weekend because I was following a Lightning scout for a road trip for a story. Wanted to kind of do an insight behind the life of a scout, what they do, what they look for, what the reports are like, just what's 150 nights on the road is like for a person and their family. And so that story will be coming up in the next few weeks or so too, and a few other features in the works. But that was one I'm kind of excited about, one I wanted to do for a long time, and happy that the, you know, Brad Whelan over there in the West Coast was able to do that with me up in Seattle and Everett the last couple of days.
Well, Joe, as always, we appreciate the time and continue success at The Athletic. We enjoy the articles, and we'll have you on soon.
Sounds great, guys. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Joe.
You got it. That is Joe Smith joining us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. If you want to react to anything Joe had to say, you can at Bolts Radio. Let's take a break. We'll come back and get you set for that last segment here on Power Lunch. As I said, hit us up on Twitter at Bolts Radio. We do have a poll question up. In your opinion, who is more dominant at their position today, Connor McDavid or Andre Vasilevskiy? And we'll give you some numbers when we return on Lightning Power Play.
This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
Glad you're with us. Power Lunch rolls along. Thanks to Joe Smith for joining us in that previous segment. You have to give Joe credit, The Athletic credit, in a lot of ways, Dave, thinking outside the box when it comes to stories, particularly during COVID when, you know, we've had this conversation before. It seemed like every writer knew everybody else's idea and ran with it at times because in large part, you just didn't have access to people. But that can't stop you from thinking outside the box. And I think Joe has done a nice job of finding stories out there that are interesting during this time. And he just said he's working on another piece here where he was traveling with, what, a scout?
Yeah, scouts? Amateur scout.
I think it's good.
It is really interesting. So the Lightning, like all organizations, have a variety of scouts. But some are scouts that scout pro hockey. And the reason you would scout pro hockey is for, like, free agent signings, trades. Maybe you find a guy who's undrafted playing in the minors, like a Yanni Gourde, that you feel has some upside potential. And the amateur scouts, as the name tells you, like, they are scouting amateur hockey. So these are players that, I mean, some of them have already been drafted, and they're still playing amateur hockey. So, for example, Chernak, that was work of the amateur scouts. When the Lightning acquired Chernak, he had yet to play a pro game, even though he had been drafted. But they're watching these amateur games, not necessarily looking for a young player that they are going to trade for. That kind of fell into their spider's web, right? Like they're casting a pretty, or maybe their fishing net, right? They're casting a large net, and they're seeing some guys that maybe you would think maybe these guys aren't available because they've been drafted. Another team already has them. But maybe they are available, you know, if you can negotiate a trade. But what's interesting to me is that, like, the pro scouts, when you scout a pro game, like, you have an idea of who you're seeing because a lot of these guys have been pro players before. you're kind of seeing like, where's their progression? How are they looking right now? How has their game grown, particularly if they're a younger player? The amateur scouts are seeing some guys year in, year out. Like the scout that Joe followed, like he covers the Western Hockey League and he has a variety of teams that he follows. So Joe mentioned he tagged along and saw some games in Seattle and Everett, and that's the Seattle junior team, not the Kraken. And Everett has a Western Hockey League team. And so, like, you may be looking at 17, 18-year-olds, but maybe because you've been scouting these teams, you saw them also when they were 16. But what's interesting is you're seeing them often as 16-year-olds, maybe for the first time.
Right.
And so unlike, I don't even know another example, but, like, when the Lightning traded for Ryan McDonagh, right? Like, somebody was scouting the Rangers and saying, here's where McDonagh's game is at right now. But it's not like Ryan McDonagh was some mystery that nobody knew who he was, right? And I think the same is true of for the European scouts who are scouting all kinds of games. Like, they're scouting mostly pro leagues over there, but some of the players who play in the pro leagues are still draft eligible. So it's really interesting that the scouts don't all do the same scouting. Like, they're seeing players at different points in their careers. They're seeing players at different ages. And it's really interesting. I was talking to Al Murray about Sean Element. Remember him? Mm-hmm. He's playing in Syracuse now, but he was undrafted. And he spent 4 years, at least four, in the Quebec League and had a great final season last year where he is from Victoriaville and was traded to the team in Victoriaville heading into, like, the stretch run of his final junior season, and that team won the championship. They had a huge upset in the final where they beat Valdor, and Max Chaikovich was playing for Valdor, which was the best team or one of the top teams in the Quebec League. So at the prospect camp, remember the Lightning had that camp with the tournament where they played Nashville and Carolina and Florida. I know you do because, you know, you did some of those games. I was asking Al about Element and Chaikovich. I said, yeah, I went down the rabbit hole and I was watching some of the highlights from that series, and he laughed. He said, boy, you really had a lot of time in your hands. And I said, you know, Element was all over the place. Like, he was really impressive. He scored some big goals. I said, did you invite him to this camp based on what you saw in this final? He said, no, we've been watching him for years. And that's kind of, we've had our eye on him for years. And it's just one of those things where when Al Murray says, we wish we had more rounds,
yeah,
maybe a guy like Element would have been a guy they would have drafted if they had more picks or there were more rounds. They just had other guys ahead of him. And he explained kind of the parts of Element's game that led to him not being drafted, basically, but that he had improved a lot and they wanted to invite him to the camp. But it's interesting that, like, you think, oh, well, they saw this guy have this great tournament, right? And now he's invited to the camp. It goes way beyond that. Like, their scouts have been watching this guy for years, but at some point they saw him for the first time. And that's what the amateur scouts are viewing, right? Because at some point, a player arrives at major junior that level.
Correct.
And then the scouts are like, okay, well, let me see this player, right? Like, I'm scouting the game, but I'm going in with an open mind. Like, who's jumping out at me? Or maybe they are also going in and saying, I'm curious to see what Joe has in his article. Like, hey, this player, I noticed he made huge strides last year. I'm going to zero in on him as I start watching their games regularly, and let's see if his progression is continuing or is it stalling. So I'm really curious to hear from an amateur scout, especially because it almost feels like they have more of a blank canvas in a way than the pro scouts. And they really have to go in with an open mind about what they're seeing and be open to be impressed, essentially, by someone that they may not expect to be impressed by.
Well, that part is true. I'm curious, if you were a scout, Dave, would you rely more on the eyes? How much would you use the analytics when you're scouting? I think that's kind of an interesting situation because you're dealing with amateurs. I don't know.
You're talking about the amateur scouts.
Yeah, the amateur scouts. You know, like I get it. You know, you become a professional at the minor league level, like let's say the AHL. Maybe you're using analytics a bit more. Maybe that can tell the story a little bit more about your game because it's...
Honestly, Greg, I don't know how much they track. I mean, the advanced analytics, I don't know how much of that is even available at the major junior level. Maybe it is, but...
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. I
you
don't
can
know.
Track, like, shot attempts, so I guess you can look at that, but I don't know that the teams have an analytics department like the Lightning and these other NHL teams have their own analytics department, and are there websites, which you know what I feel of, how I feel about that and how much stock you want to put into it is up to you. I'm not sure if I'm a scout for an NHL team, I'm putting that much faith into the numbers that might come out of a website that is unaffiliated with the league. But I don't even know if those websites exist for amateur hockey, even high level amateur hockey.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. Just I find the scouting facet of all leagues really fascinating. If for any other reason, Dave, the work those guys have to put in, you know, whether it pays off or not, you won't know until down the road. But how would you like to be a scout, let's say, for like during this run for the Blackhawks or the Penguins, where you're giving up draft picks and you don't have first round picks or second round picks, and maybe the ones you do end up getting flipped for an asset to win now. And, you know, the fact that you're on the road, it's not for everybody. But I find that profession, I think spending some time with those guys, how they go about their craft and how rewarding is it? I mean, I've got to think, like, for the Lightning the last 2 years, if you're a scout, that's the pinnacle of your career. You're helping an organization win a cup.
Well, and we had Al on before the draft during the short off season, and I think you asked him that question, you know, what is it like to go into a draft without a first round pick for how many years in a row?
Yeah.
Or sometimes they have a first round pick, they pick a player, and then that player is ultimately traded, like a Nolan Foote, for example. And his answer was interesting. He was almost like, we love the challenge. Like, we look at it as a challenge to find these guys that have slipped past the first round.
Right.
It's almost like, I know I'm an elite runner, but now you're going to put, like, this big walking boot on my foot.
Now you're going to be
still
going to
run really well, right? Like, I don't care that this boot is on my foot. I'm still going to perform as well as conceivably possible. Like, they have that competitive spirit too.
Yeah, they
right?
do.
Like, we're going to find the guys. You're taking away our first and our second. Bring it on. Like, we're going to find these guys.
It's fascinating.
That was what I got from him.
Yeah,
anyway.
No, I
Now,
I
think, like, if you were to say, hey, we're going to give you 5 first round picks, I don't think he would turn those down. But that's not the hand that he has been dealt right now. And if you have 5 first round picks, it probably means that you're in like the Buffalo boat or the Ottawa boat. Or more recently, not more recently, but I mean, they're starting to turn the corner. But like Detroit has been in that boat. Maybe they haven't had 5 first round picks. But what team was it that had 8 picks upcoming in the first and second rounds? Arizona, wasn't it? Doesn't Arizona have 8 picks?
Might be.
In the first and second rounds next year. That would be like a bunch of presents under the tree at Christmas, but it also means that your team on the ice probably had some rough years recently.
We don't know the answer to this unless reports get leaked out, and he might not even have an interest in doing the job, Dave, but I mean... Is it a matter of time before Al Murray is a GM? Just based off of, you know, kind of his track record in the draft, which I understand that's a portion of it. You have to do other things. And I'm not even saying I would want that job. I have no idea, Dave. But I certainly would think if you're a team that's looking to evaluate talent appropriately and you have a list of guys, I mean, would you think Al Murray's on that short list? I mean, just based off of what he's done in multiple organizations.
Well, there's no question that he can assess young talent. And he's not – I mean, he is seeing the players, but he's relying on a fairly extensive staff. I mean, he's going to the big tournaments, but it's not like he's always scouting these Russian leagues. You know, he has people on his staff who are out there who are filling out the reports, and maybe they reach a point where, like, all right, here's the cream of the crop, and now Al is the one who gets eyes on them at that point. I mean, I'm not certain. Maybe we should ask him the next time he comes on, like, how much of, like, the beginning of the process scouting are you doing personally, or do you rely on your staff to kind of cull down the list to the point that, all right, let's show these guys to Al. Let's make our case to Al that these are worthy of draft picks, and then he sees them, and they talk to them too. I mean, they talk to the players, and they talk to their coaches and people who know them as well, because it's not just what they're doing on the ice. It's learning about the player as a person.
It is, and it's interesting.
Anyway, that's a long-winded way for me to say I'm interested to read this article from Joe when it comes out.
Subscribe.
Yeah, so good on him to come up with that idea. We'll see if he writes the idea on the dominant player.
So let's get into it a little bit. Let's just give you some results.
We put it off long enough. Let's dive in.
So Vasi right now at 71%, McDavid at 29%. That's not unusual considering.
You think there's a little hometown bias?
Tampa heavy there. Yeah. But you know what stood out for me, Dave, and the reason why we posted this and the reason why I felt strongly about it is just because you don't see a level of dominance as much at a position in today's NHL because of the parity in today's game. I just think it's really hard. The competition's pretty even. I think particularly with scoring, teams are better equipped to handle a specific player because of the coaching and the video, and I think the goaltending has gotten a lot better. And, you know, when we see guys like Connor McDavid have the success he's having over the last couple of years and then look at what Vasi's doing, you know, really over the last three or four, you know, to me it stood out that these are two guys in a league where there's not a lot of separation between maybe the top scorer and the 10th scorer. We can certainly quibble with talents for sure, and that's what talk shows are about. But it's unusual, I think, to find two guys in today's game that might be head and shoulders better than everybody else at their positions. And I think we have that a little bit with McDavid and Vasilevsky. And we just asked the question, who's more dominant at his position today? And, you know, again, so far, most people are picking Vasi, but I think we have to acknowledge, you know, the run that McDavid has been on. When teams know that he is the guy, along with Dreisaitl, and being able to almost still put up 2 points per game this early in the season is something to be to look at and be impressed about.
So I guess I look at it this way. I look at the position. And what can we learn about answering this question of dominance from the position? Because if we're in agreement that Vasilevsky is the top goalie and McDavid is considered the most skilled offensive player in the game today, I'm still not certain that I would call him the most well-rounded offensive player. Crosby's had a tough start to the year with the COVID and the injury and everything else. But I have always felt that Crosby is the most well-rounded forward in the game, at least in the time that McDavid has been in the league. McDavid is more explosive, but there's more to it. Like, Crosby does a lot of other things that are beyond his, you know, explosive offensive ability, which, you know, he's really good, obviously, offensively as well. But let's go under the assumption that we have a dominant forward and we have a dominant goalie. So which position can we say is more impactful in terms of this dominance question? So on the goalie side, the goalie plays 60 minutes. McDavid, in this case, probably plays about 20, maybe a little bit more. That's a third of the game, whereas Vasilevskiy's on the ice the entire 60 minutes. That's a difference, right?
It is.
Also, as much as McDavid can do amazing things all by himself, and we saw that goal he scored against the Rangers where it was 1-on-4 and he came in and scored, he is limited from this standpoint that he is reliant on the guys who are on the ice with him. Because most times a 1-on-4 will not result in a goal, right? Like when you say he's at 2 points per game, like a lot of those are assists, you know, where he's giving it to someone who's scoring the goal. Or maybe somebody is giving it to him in a position where he can score. Which is not to say that Vasilevskiy or any goalie is not dependent on the team in front of him. But I think the goalie is more capable of stealing the show single-handedly, right? Like, the team was terrible, but the goalie stole the game, right? It's not often that you hear the team was terrible except for McDavid, and he stole the game for us. So I think that is also a difference. On the other side of the ledger, though, to me, the goalie is limited to one end of the ice. And the goalie's performance is somewhat contingent on what is coming at him. Whereas McDavid can go all over the ice to get the puck. And he can have an impact in a more far-reaching way in terms of creating. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
So I don't know how you parse all of that out. I don't think there is an easy answer because the positions are different. And because they're different, they add different elements to this question. And I think it probably depends on personal choice. Like, do you prefer chocolate ice cream or, I won't say vanilla, but let's
I love
say,
vanilla, Dave. I love
yeah,
vanilla.
Yeah, okay, you like vanilla. Okay, so some people like chocolate, some people like vanilla. There's nothing wrong with choosing the other flavor in this instance. But, like, to me, the goalie is somewhat limited in what he can do. But what he can do can have a huge impact on the game. The forward isn't on the ice the whole game and single-handedly has a harder time having an impact, but he can create more based on his position. But he does have to rely on his teammates. Not that Vasilevskiy doesn't. I mean, we've just spent a lot of time talking about how well the Lightning are defending in front of Vasilevskiy, which is a big part of it. And if there's a huge breakdown and a guy gets an open net on a cross-ice pass, that Vasilevskiy has no chance to stop, even as athletic and acrobatic and amazing as he is, that's probably more on the team. But you know what I'm saying. Like, the goalie can erase mistakes that his team makes much more so than one forward can do it from his position. So I don't know where you come down on that, but that's kind of the way I look at it. And I don't really have an answer. I just kind of presented how I think about it.
No, I think it's fair. I think Vasi has the chance to be more dominant for a longer stretch in a game than McDavid does.
That's the 60 minutes versus 20.
Correct.
Yeah.
The other thing too is, though, maybe it's even more impressive that McDavid is making that type of impact in less amount of time than Vasi can, just because of the nature of the position. In addition to the fact that he's probably dealing with a ton of lineup combinations where the other team is matching up their best defensive players against him to try and slow
yeah.
him down. And so I think there is a challenge there for McDavid, understanding that people know that if you limit McDavid's chances, there's a really good chance that you're going to win a game. With Vasi, you're hoping you can beat him maybe three times a game to come away with a win, which I think is incredibly hard to do, to have that mindset. Like, you go into a game and you say, look, if we can limit McDavid's touches, easier said than done, and if we have a good back end that can, you know, be physical with him, limit his chances, easier said than done, we've got a fighting chance. But then you go to a team and say, well, look, to even think about beating the Lightning, we're probably going to have to get three by Vasi. And it's a hard Like mentally, that would be a challenge. Now it's a good challenge for those players. They want to go against the best, and I acknowledge that. But I think, in fairness, what Vasi is doing, in my opinion, is more impressive than what McDavid is doing. And, you know, because Vasi's facing a lot of different shots from different angles, different teams, different players, and even though scoring has gone up since the lockout, or at least the rules are a little bit more in favor of offenses, and that's the other thing I think we have to acknowledge. I think what Vasi's doing is a little more impressive. But, you know, certainly there are other people out there who may agree. They may disagree. And certainly we want to have that conversation with them. Hit us up on Twitter, as we said, at Bolts Radio. And let me get another glance at the poll question here and where we are. All right, Vasi's now at 69%, Dave. McDavid at 31%. Mm-hmm. And so McDavid's starting to pick up a bit more traction when it comes to this question. And, of course, if I sent this over to Edmonton, I'm sure it'd be the other way around.
Yeah.
But I think it's fun to at least have that debate. We did have a question yesterday, or a comment. Busta Beak wanted to weigh in. We asked about what stood out during the last three games of that homestand. Busta Beak wanted to weigh in a little bit. He said, the Panthers definitely try the physical route to beat Tampa. While Carolina doesn't really engage, neither is significantly effective strategy. I think the main difference between all of three of these teams is Tampa has Vasilevsky. Huge in the second season, can't be undervalued. I'm not sure the second season, that might be a...
That means playoffs.
Yes, huge in the second playoffs. So, can't be undervalued. Yeah, I mean, look, as we said before, what was one of the things when we took a look at the matchups last year, Dave? I mean, there were a couple of things, but one that always stood out. Just Vasi, the Lightning had a sometimes big advantage in net when they went against those three teams in the playoffs last year before they got to the Stanley Cup final. And it wasn't like those goaltenders performed poorly. In fact, I think we noted that, you know, even a guy like Nedeljkovic, while maybe he gave up a leaky goal here and there, when you take a look at his final numbers, they were impressive. And if you would have said, look, Nedeljkovic is going to have a goals against under 2, or, you know, under 2.50, you know, Carolina probably would have said, you know, I like our chances that we're going to win any series. The problem was you went up against Vasi, who is, again, the most dominant at his position. And, you know, we saw Florida play three goaltenders, and it really stood out the advantage the Lightning do have, I thought, Dave, in the playoffs last year. Even though the opposition they faced in the playoffs was still very solid.
We've seen enough examples of teams that win Stanley Cups with good goaltending, but we wouldn't say the goalie was necessarily like the best goalie in the league at that time. So it can be done, and you figure, I don't think this is a leap, like if a team wins the Stanley Cup with a goalie who is not considered the best goalie in the league at that time, that means the team that had the best goalie in the league at that time didn't win the Stanley Cup, right? So whether they lost in a head-to-head matchup or some other team took them out, having the best goalie in the league or one of the best, I think we're in agreement that Vasilevsky is in a class by himself right now, but if you want to make the argument that there are other goalies who are also the best in the league right now, he's one of them. There's no guarantee that that means you are going to win a Stanley Cup or win a particular playoff series. And there are enough examples of teams finding ways to win a series and win a Stanley Cup with a goalie that is good, gave them really good play during the playoff run, but was not necessarily considered a Vezina finalist that year.
Correct.
So, just because the Lightning have Vasilevsky does not mean that in a matchup with one of these other teams where you figure the Lightning have an edge in the goalie matchup, it doesn't mean that necessarily they're going to win, because there are other ways a team can capture a series, right? Like you can defend supremely well yourself and just limit so many scoring chances that maybe you don't need to score, whatever you said, more than 3. Maybe you win a bunch of games 2-1. and what you're doing in your own end in terms of your own team defense, which can be, in the case of Carolina, as an example, play with the puck a lot. Like, Vasilevskiy can't control that. He can't control how much puck possession Carolina has, to use the Hurricanes as an example. All he can do is try and stop the pucks that come at him. So there's a lot more that goes into a game than just goalie performance. But I'm not going to argue Buzzabeek's point that the Lightning are pretty happy with the guy they have in net, as they should be. And he is capable of stealing games and stealing series. What I think has happened for the Lightning, though, and I think I can say this unequivocally, in the last 2 years where they've won 8 playoff series, Vasilevskiy has not had to steal any of those series. Maybe an odd game here or there, he has been asked to do an exceptional amount to help the Lightning win a game in which they were pretty significantly outplayed. But those have been really few and far between. And for each series as a whole, there's no way that somebody can make the argument and say the Lightning got outplayed in this series and they won it because of Vasilevskiy. No. That hasn't happened in the last 2 years. So he has been a part of the winning formula, but he hasn't been the only reason for the winning formula, which tells you about what it takes to win a Stanley Cup, right?
It certainly does, partner. It certainly does. And I thought that was a pretty good debate there about the question. Hit us up on Twitter, please, at Bolts Radio. Weigh in tomorrow. We are going to be talking about Lightning and Flyers. And we also have, what, Scott Laughlin on, right, Dave? From SiriusXM NHL Radio.
Good to talk with Scott.
Yeah, we always like Scotty and get his thoughts on what's happening around the league as well.
By the way, before we break, did you see Barkov got hurt in the game last night?
I did.
Mayfield had a check on him in open ice. Look like a knee injury.
Hope for his sake he's okay.
Yes.
One of the best.
I think he did not finish the game, though, so I'm sure that everybody in Pantherland is holding their breath right now.
Injuries always change the trajectory of a team when it comes to where they're supposed to go, and Barkov is their best player. No doubt about that. And by the way, congratulations to Rick Peckham. Did you see that he did a Nashville game?
Right Pete place, Weber. Right time, right?
Hopefully Pete's okay. I guess he wasn't feeling well, but Rick Peckham was obviously in town, and
In town, wasn't he? He had a reason to be in Toronto.
He was in town.
We're hoping to get Rick on. Yes. I'm as interested in asking about how that whole thing unfolded.
I know.
And he is such a committed professional. That sounds really vanilla, but like, for Rick to do a game, it's not something he will just like slap dash it together and just arrive. Like, he puts in the time. I wonder how much time he had to prepare for that broadcast.
Well, the good news is
he hasn't called a game in
hasn't.
You know,
but how many times?
A full
has
season.
Seen, at least plus. He had a Nashville was one of those teams that, I mean, he has seen a lot of over the last couple of years just because of like exhibition games.
Yeah.
And during the regular season. So I'm sure he had an idea. I mean, he has an idea of who was playing in general, I think, still. He's not that far removed, Dave.
Right.
You know, if this was 10 years down the road, yeah, he might be like, all right, who's this guy?
But even if he wasn't that far removed, just his attention to detail and the amount of preparation he puts into every broadcast, I doubt that he got the call like at 11 o'clock in the morning on the day of the game. I think that they probably gave him, I'm guessing they gave him a heads up. Either that or he agreed to do it and he really crammed.
And it would still sound amazing.
It would. It would sound amazing. He didn't get to call a goal, though. Didn't Nashville get shut out?
I think
was it 3-0? Call a goal for Nashville.
Yes, I think they did. I think you're right about that. It's all right.
But it's always good to have Scott on. We can talk about some league stuff. That was what made me think of the Barkov injury, because Scott often gives us kind of the perspective league-wide, and I think the Panthers are definitely a story that is captivating the league this year and the start they've gotten off to, in addition to all the other stuff with the Quenneville, you know, resignation and everything else.
For sure. All right, partner, great job. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yep.
Get it done.
Talk
again.
To you tomorrow, Greg.
Thanks to Steve Ersnick. Thanks to Joe Smith for joining us. Hit us up on that poll question at Bolts Radio. I am Greg Linnelli. We'll be with you again tomorrow, noon to 1 on Lightning Power Play.